This is Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Remembrance. Hello and welcome to episode 23 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave and I am joined this week, as every week. If you drew a direct line between his house and mine, then you would be rather sad. It's Yannick. Hello, Yannick.
Hello, how are you?
I am doing incredibly well, thank you very much indeed. Yeah. What an episode. What an episode to review. I am so looking forward to this.
Yeah, I've watched it four times.
and one of those is in French.
And one of those in French,
yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
No, Just to see how good a job they did. And they did all right. We might talk about that after the review.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've watched it twice, both times in English, not surprisingly. My efforts of French are very similar to, well, we'll go on to that in a bit, I think. But we're also joined from way, way, way across this table by our guest this week, which is Caroline. Hello, Caroline.
Hello.
And yes, Caroline is known by many as the co-host of the Bugcast, the award-winning podcast. I can say it this time. Yep. and other things as well. We'll have a bit of a proper chat with Caroline after the review. But in this week's episode, we are going to be reviewing Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 1, Remembrance. And like I say, we'll be having a chat with Caroline later on, and probably the highlight of the entire episode, we will be subjecting Caroline to those quickfire questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but looking forward to this. It's going to be great. So I think we should crack straight on with our review of Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 1, Remembrance. So then before we actually dive right into this this episode review, I should warn you that for obvious reasons, this review will contain spoilers. If you haven't seen this episode yourself and you intend to, I would strongly recommend you go and watch the episode first, purely because we're going to be discussing elements of what happened during the episode and also our own opinions of it as well. So with that having been said, we go into the prologue. They usually call it a teaser, but for some reason, it's being referred to as a prologue.
Well, yeah, because it was quite long. So it's more than a teaser.
I suppose, yes. Because a teaser usually tells you what you're about to see, what's going to be happening going forward.
Yeah.
But, of course, we don't know anything at this point of what's actually going to happen.
Because the prologue made more questions than answers.
Yes.
Yes.
Very much so.
Yes, it did. So, in the prologue, we see Data and Jean-Luc Picard playing poker in 10 forward aboard the Enterprise D. They're discussing Data's ability to bluff. In the game they're playing, Data raises the bet to 50, which is everything that Picard has. Picard stops and starts to make a cup of tea, offering Data milk, sugar, and Data then asks him, why are you stalling? Picard responds that he doesn't want the game to end. Picard eventually goes all in, and Data lays down 5 Queens of Hearts. Picard looks out of the window to see Mars, which begins weathering an attack of rogue synthetics. He gasps and wakes up from this dream at his family vineyard, Chateau Picard. Now, that was obviously a reference to the Short Treks episode Children of Mars, which kind of showed you the start of this this attack.
Yeah, but without revealing a lot, actually. So we it's nice to have seen Children of Mars before, but it's not mandatory, and it just adds to the questions. I mean,
absolutely. Well, that's what the short treks were for. They were designed to ask questions.
Yes,
but seriously, people, imagine waking up to that view every single morning. You get out of bed, you go up to the window, you open the curtains, and you just have acres upon acres of vineyard. It was a beautiful view.
It was a lovely view,
it was funny to see Data on this scene. But did you notice? I don't know if it's just me or if it's on purpose or I don't know. But Brent Spiner's hands, you could see he's getting old. And I wonder if they didn't mask that as they mask obviously his face to make it look younger. I don't know if they did that on purpose because it's just a dream. It's not really Data. So I don't know.
Yeah, or whether it was just an oversight.
Maybe. I don't know. Because the hands are in, the full screen maybe at some point when he picks up tokens.
Perhaps it wasn't Brent Spiner's hands at all.
Perhaps, yeah.
Well,
but it was...
I don't know if you saw the new movie that came out, Cats. That was a multi-million pound movie, and that came out with lots of human hands. So it is a possibility. It's just an error.
Yeah.
Or maybe it means something that we don't know yet.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
I mean, you say that Data didn't look, well, was probably designed to look like he hadn't aged, but you could
tell
really
he'd aged.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You could really see that he'd aged.
Yeah, his face is filled out as well compared to the earlier series, next gen.
But I think that what we saw on the screen is a younger looking Brent Spiner than what we would have seen if they didn't have used de-aging techniques.
Yeah, which we mentioned in our new segments last week.
Yeah.
But I don't care. He looked brilliant. It was really good to see him.
It's not really Data anyway, so it's just a fragment of Picard's imagination, so it's okay.
Yeah. Maybe he grew up in his imagination.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm kind of clutching at straws there.
Yeah, but I agree.
Meanwhile, in Greater Boston, Darge and her Zahian boyfriend are sharing a romantic evening. She tells him that she has been accepted for a fellowship in artificial intelligence and quantum consciousness at the Daystrom Institute. Just then, a squad of masked men transport into the room. One throws a knife, killing Darge's boyfriend. Forcing the panicking Darge down on her coffee table, one places a pair of devices on her temples with a holographic interface, quickly swipes through a few screens, reporting that she hadn't been activated. Doing air quotes for the benefit of the tape. Getting to her feet and throwing aside the table, they briefly interrogate her, demanding about the location of the others and where she's from. But from her bewildered responses, they determine that they can get what they need later. They place a bag over Darge's head to render her unconscious, but she begins fighting back, alarming them that she is now activating. Behaving like a highly trained and skilled fighter, she incapacitates the squad in moments and shoots them dead with one of their weapons, all the while the bag is still on her head. Removing the bag, she looks around in confusion and dropping the weapon in shock. She mourns over the body of her fallen boyfriend, and then, with a sudden gasp, she has a vision of the face of Jean-Luc Picard.
I have a problem, one problem with this scene. When the guys transport into the apartment,
mm-hmm.
they immediately throw a knife to her boyfriend, as if they knew he would be exactly there at exactly that moment.
Uh-huh.
That was no time, he could have been surprised and then they would have thrown the knife, but so that was a timing problem, I guess, in the
or
in
were this, they seeing them before they arrived?
Yeah,
well, I think I think that is correct, actually, because if you watch the sequence, it does appear as though the transportation has not completed by the time that knife is thrown.
Mm. So they went there knowing what to do?
Yes.
Mm, okay.
It's not inconceivable that they might have been monitoring it.
Okay, yeah. Still, I don't buy it, but...
No, that's fair, isn't it? It is stretching it slightly. So her boyfriend was a Zahian, and so too, and I'm going to get this wrong, was Mihani Ikehali Kapo.
Well done.
who was the character that Sylvia was talking to in the Runaway short treks. I think, was it the first one, Runaway?
Yes.
She was the sister of the king or something. But that was the only connection to Zahia that I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so after that, yeah, we have the opening credits and very, very good music, I think. Awesome theme from Jeff Russo. I also I did a geeky thing. I watched...
No!
Yes, I watched... When I watched it, I was looking at the credits, and then I thought, that's an awful lot of producers. So I counted, I rewinded, there's one consulting producer, four supervising producers, six co-executive producers, eight executive producers, including Patrick Stewart and Alex Kurtzman. So that's, 14, 18, 19 producers.
It's crazy. It really is.
For the episode.
I thought that Alex Kurtzman was going to be the showrunner for this series as well, but he's not. Michael Chambon is the showrunner.
He's credited as executive producer and creator?
Yes, and writer as well, I believe.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
I think pretty much all of the other roles are mixed up between a creator, story, teleplay, executive producer.
all
of them.
Lainey says in the chat room that the theme is very Star Trek classic, Star Trek the original series. Yeah, I have to agree. There's some I heard some pieces of Deep Space Nine too, and also I think it sounds more like a movie theme than a series theme. I don't know if it might be just me, but it would be something that would be very well suited on a movie, on one of the not the latest movies, because we don't talk about the latest movies, but one of the next gen movies.
See, this is where I disagree slightly. I thought that the theme tune wasn't typically Star Trek. I think it was a lot deeper than that. If you look at the Discovery theme tune, which was also composed by Jeff Russo, that was typically Star Trek. Had a lot of the components of what made a Star Trek theme tune in the 60s through 90s. But I thought the Picard theme tune was a lot more sophisticated.
That's probably why I think it's more a movie theme than a series theme.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a billion times better than the aberration that is the Enterprise theme tune. But yeah, it was brilliant. It was a beautiful opening sequence. The theme tune was absolutely brilliant. But I wouldn't say it was classic Star Trek.
It was a bit of a modern edge to it, but maybe that's indicative to the fact that this is not atypically Star Trek. This is not atypically Star Trek either, because I don't remember any of the other series starting off not in space. They might have had episodes where it might have gone into a planet, but this is different by its very nature.
Yes.
Yeah. That's true.
Yes. Now I'll give you that, definitely. Yeah.
Discovery is just an animated graphics, isn't it?
It is. It shows you the discovery across the screen and graphics and geometric shapes and such like. I think we might have a spare presenter slot on the upcoming Threshold review, because I don't think we'll be inviting Caroline back after that one. Oh.
As soon as I was saying it, I got it wrong. You know what I'm like with words.
To be fair, I don't think she's the only guest we've had that has mixed those two up.
No, but
I wanted to be really offensive if I say Star Wars, Star Trek, what's the difference? But I was only saying if I was going to be offensive.
Sorry, you did say it. We have it recorded. It's proof. I've got it.
You're
going to
edit it out now, aren't you?
We've got the witness.
I'm going to edit it back in about, a very random points every, I don't know, 13, 14 minutes maybe, Yannick?
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, our previous guest referenced the other S thing on purpose.
Quite right, T. Anyway, we'll head straight into Act 1 then. At Chateau Picard, Jean-Luc and his dog Number One.
I love that.
Yeah.
Walk through the fields, greeting his workers tending to the grapevines as he passes by. Picard talks to the dog in French. He returns to the house where he speaks with Laris and Jaban, two Romulan refugees who work as his housekeepers. Picard talks of his dreams and how he is feeling. As Jaban makes breakfast, Picard laments his agreement to be interviewed live by the Federation News Network. He goes up to a replicator and orders tea, Earl Grey, decaf.
Which made us chuckle.
Yeah.
And apparently, Patrick Stewart wrote that line into the script himself, thinking that the fans might appreciate it. Well, duh.
Yeah. So someone's going to have to explain to me why the French translation is tea, Earl Grey, hot decaf.
Oh. Okay.
Tea, Earl Grey, chaud, decaf.
I cannot explain that.
Why?
That makes no sense. Well,
no sense at all.
Don't know.
But yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm pretty certain if you watch the credits right to the very end, it'll tell you who did the French overdubs.
No, because everything is in English, and then there's only the French version. There's no the credits are not in French, and usually when they translate things like that, they translate the credits too. So I don't know. Maybe on Prime, I can switch the to French credits, but yeah, I don't see anything about the translation.
Ah, interesting. Because it does on Netflix.
On Netflix, but did they do that for Discovery? Because the episode was, they had time to translate and...
I'm pretty certain I don't know. That for Discovery, at the end of the credits, when you get to the end of the credits proper, you then get... static slides that show you French, Polish, Spanish, Russian.
Well,
and the people that are involved in it.
Yeah, that's my homework for next week.
Yes, and try and find out exactly why they, quite frankly, got that wrong.
Yeah.
Talking of French, Yannick, I believe you have something to say about that.
But yeah, so in this scene, Picard speaks in French to Number One, his dog. And I have to say that Patrick Stewart does a pretty good job, actually, except for the last word when he says something about asking Number One, telling Number One that he should not pretend to not understand, and they have practiced, and whoever wrote this in French made a mistake with the last word. And he says on s'est pratiqué instead of on s'est entraîné, but it's an easy mistake to make when you're not native French. So
what's the English translation of those two?
We have practiced for on s'est pratiqué, and we have trained.
Ah,
which is the proper way to say that in French.
Ah, I understand. Okay. So my observation on that particular part of the scene, was my own realization that my French is comparable to Picard's. But I don't know. I would have expected that having been born and raised in France, the French language would have come a lot more naturally to Picard as a character. But then I discovered that in the 24th century, French was considered an archaic language. Mm. So it wasn't in common usage. So that might explain why his use of the French language seemed hesitant. I didn't actually hesitate for effect there.
Or was the 24th century archaic a plot point to make it less likely people would pick apart his use of French?
No. I need to check that now, because I actually got that from some research. But I'm pretty certain that it was said that French is considered an archaic language purely because of the fact that, you know, we're, what, three centuries beyond our current, no, real-world timeline.
Yeah.
That the use of language has changed significantly over the centuries.
Maybe I'm just cynical.
A what?
It's understandable with the technology they have, with the transporters and all that. Like, for example, Dash is living in Boston.
Yeah.
And she's going to, she was going to work in Okinawa.
So, that's right, yeah. Mm.
That's a hell of a commute.
I think she would have moved there rather than gone in every day.
Transportation Why? Options.
I mean, Picard goes from La Barre to San Francisco in just a few seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because there's a scene later on where one of the characters moves from the US to France really quickly.
Yeah, well, they all do. Picard goes from La Barre to San Francisco and then to Okinawa and then back.
Yeah.
And I have something to say about that later.
Yes. I think that scene that we've just spoken about may have contained my quote of the week already. Mm-hmm. So, in the kitchen, just before he orders his decaf Earl Grey, his hot decaf Earl Grey, he says to Shaban, you know, sometimes you talk to me as if I was a benign old codger. Laris is walking past. She says, codger? And Shaban says, somewhere between a coot and a geezer, I believe. that tickled me.
Yeah. They look very human, those Romulans. Romulans.
Is there a relationship between the Romulans and the Vulcans? I do apologize if I'm offending any race by saying this.
I think to remember that they have a common ancestors.
Right. That explains it. Because I thought, before we were told they were Romulan, I thought they were Vulcan.
Yeah, but the eyebrows give them up.
Yeah, they've got creepy eyebrows.
Typical Romulan eyebrows. Mm. Yeah, but they really look human with I suppose they've been there for ages, so they're picking up on habits and gesture and things that humanized.
Yeah, I suppose so. We've spoken about that before as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like people getting more human.
Precisely.
But they were really like human with pointy ears. Ears, there's no H. Human with pointy ears.
Picard dresses in a jacket and tie as the news crew sets up in his study. He's nervous, making sure from Shaban that the interview will not address Picard's separation from Starfleet. Shaban assures that he did so no less than 3 times. Laris tells him not to forget who he is and what he did, by saying that we have not. Shaban tells him to just be the captain they remember.
Yeah. And I don't remember exactly the French translation, but that was not be the captain that they remember. So they changed that too.
I'm sensing a bit of bitterness.
Yeah, but only because, as I said to you, or well, in our Telegram group at t.me/teghpodcast, I think, except for the original series that I watched in French because I watched it with someone else, but I think it's the first time I ever watched any Star Trek. Anything with Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner and all this gang in French. So yeah, I'm not used to watching Star Trek in French. So It was an interesting experience.
Isn't it easier for you to watch it in French?
No, because I'm used to Stewart's voice in English, and when I listen to him in French, it's strange, and the words are not entirely in sync with the lips, and the audio quality is not the same. It's a studio recording instead of probably live recording on set.
Yeah, I get that.
So it is strange.
And who does the voice then? Because obviously it's not Patrick Stewart.
I don't know. Not the same person that did in the Next Gen, because I just had a quick look. Well, a quick ear.
Yes. Yeah, I did wonder whether me saying about you watching in French actually made any sense at all, because you don't watch in French, do you? So the Federation News Network interview begins with a capsule biography of Picard. Now, I have a problem with this whole interview setup thing. Sat behind the interviewer are what I'm going to call the production team. So a couple of people sitting on chairs and tapping on keyboards that make beeping noises. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Why have you got things that make beeping noises in a studio recording environment?
Yeah.
If that was me, I would fire them.
Yeah, but maybe in the 24th century, they have noise cancellation thingies that are in sync with their equipment and it doesn't end up on the recording.
But that seems a lot of work to allow the noises to then cancel them digitally later on. Why not I don't know, switch it off?
I don't know. But they have very nice floating cameras.
They were cool.
Like mini drones.
I'll give them that. And the little monitor TV screen that's kind of like holographic projection thing.
Is that the TV production equivalent of a self-checkout in a shop? You don't need a cameraman, you just get it floating to itself.
Yeah, I guess there was the cameraman. He was driving the cameras with his
BP keyboard, yeah.
BP keyboard, yeah.
So the interviewer, Richter, asks him about the supernova that destroyed Romulus in 2387. Richter's questioning grows aggressive, with her asking him the very question that he dreaded. Why did he leave Starfleet? He says that he left the Enterprise E to command a rescue armada of 10,000 warp-capable ferries to Romulus before the supernova, to relocate 900 million Romulans. He compares it to the evacuation at Dunkirk during World War II. Picard said that the Federation abandoned its duty to save millions of lives, regardless of whether or not they were Romulan. Then the unimaginable happened. The rescue armada was wiped out by a group of rogue synthetics who destroyed the Utopia Planitia fleet yards, killing 92,143 residents and igniting the stratosphere, which still burns now. The intention of the attack remains unknown, and synthetic life forms were banned as a result of the attack, a decision that Picard believes is a mistake. So we know where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the reporter.
No, me neither.
No. I mean, she was very confrontational from the start. Yeah.
Yeah. She didn't let him finish his first answer before...
She had the answers in her mind that she held him accountable, didn't give him an option to give his answer.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what he said, she'd already made her mind out about something.
Yeah, and she didn't like Romulans.
No.
That was clear. That was absolutely clear.
Yeah.
Richter brings up the subject of Commander Data and asks if Picard ever lost faith in him. He replies, never. She asks him what he did lose faith in, why he resigned from Starfleet. And Picard says that it was because it was no longer Starfleet. Starfleet slunk from its duties by calling off the rescue and abandoning the people that they had sworn to save. It was not only dishonourable, it was downright criminal. And he was not prepared to stand by and be a spectator. He then accuses Richter of having no clue of what his reference to Dunkirk was, of being a stranger to history and to war, and walks away from the interview.
Yeah, I think he's right. She had absolutely no clue what he was talking about.
It was interesting seeing an angry Picard as well, because he lost his cool a bit, which...
But he was very, very well restrained.
He was very well restrained, but one of the things in The Next Generation was how restrained he was, if that makes sense. Mm. So that was just an interesting little bit of level of coolness he'd lost.
But also, I think he retained a lot of his... A lot of his credibility.
Yeah.
Because this interview would have been watched by... I couldn't even begin to think what number of people would have been watching it. Had he picked up his microphone, thrown it across the studio, walked off in a huff swearing blindly, then he would have come across really badly as a result. But you just say, I think we're done here, I think was the phrase he used.
Yeah.
And just walk off. That's him with his dignity intact.
Yeah.
But yeah, and doing that just after, you know, noting that she doesn't know anything about war and I mean, she's not legitimate in what she's doing.
Exactly. Yeah. And in fact, I think he did that on purpose. I think when he mentioned Dunkirk and she repeated back to him, Dunkirk, you knew that she didn't know what he was referring to, and he knew it. It was almost as though he realised he'd scored a point at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Quite right, too. But that entire interview proves that even at the birth of the 25th century, journalists and interviewers are still complete vultures with no morals, with no nothing, to be fair.
Well, let's not generalise, but some of them, and this one particularly, was not a good representative of the profession.
Okay, I think it would have been fair if I had said that they still exist in the 25th century. That's what I meant. Outside, back in Greater Boston, we see Darge watching the interview on a view screen from a rainy street corner. She recognises the man from her vision.
Ah, that's interesting, because the way they worded that, she didn't know who she'd visioned at the beginning. Or did she? Because she was on his... Was she on the way to get to him?
Well, I don't know if she knew who he was, but she knew she was the person she had to go to.
We hear a bit about that later on. The explanation of how she knows Picard, but at this point, when she was watching him on the screen, I think that might have been the first time she actually realised who the vision was. So on to Act 2 then. Back at Chateau Picard, Picard sits on a porch with his dog, drinking wine and quoting Shakespeare. Number One begins barking as he sees Darge arriving. Picard stands to look at her and asks what she wants. She says she saw the interview and asks if he knows her, but he's not sure. She tells him of the attack in the apartment and her killing of the assailants. She just knew how to fight them. She said it was like lightning seeking the ground. Picard holds her hands and tries to calm her. She tells him she keeps seeing his face, Everything inside of me says that I'm safe with you, she tells him. And at this point, I'm recalling the thoughts that we had when we first saw the trailer. There were some theories that suggested that Darge may have been Picard's daughter or something of that ilk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I was at this point in the show. Obviously, we've seen the rest of it, so we understand where that goes. But at this point, first time watching, I'm thinking, yeah, maybe she is his daughter.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't. I didn't think that. I didn't know what to think, but I remember when we talked about the trailer, we had we supposed that she might be the daughter of she might be a Borg, and maybe the daughter of the Borg Queen. I think we suggested. Mm-hmm. But that's because they did a great job on the trailers to mix this scene and visions of Borgs and Seven of Nine and everything. So yeah, they did a good job in the trailer to
confuse us.
Hide. Yeah, confuse us. Yeah.
Yeah. That evening, Laris and Jaban heal Darge's wound from the fight and offer her a blanket. Picard offers her a cup of Earl Grey and sits with her on the decking. He comments on her necklace. She takes it off and hands it to him when he asks to see it. She asks him if he'd ever been a stranger to himself, to which he replies, many, many times. He passes her back her necklace and asks her name. Now, she already knows his name somehow, not just from history and his recent interview, but from what she calls an older and deeper place. He agrees with her, but doesn't know why. He tells her that she isn't crazy and that she isn't dangerous. Number One would have let him know, who even now has chosen to rest beside her chair rather than that of his master. He offers her a room and Laris takes her there, but before Darge goes, she thanks Picard. As she leaves, he touches her necklace, which is still on the table. Now, I'm really surprised she left that necklace behind, because we knew at this point how important it was to her. Because I think she'd already said that her father had given it to her.
Hmm. Although, if you think about it, when she was attacked, she activated. Was that another form of activation without her knowing what she's done? Because did she have an urge to leave it there for a different purpose?
Yeah.
A higher purpose sort of thing.
That's possible.
That's not unreasonable. Not unreasonable at all.
Did she say to her boyfriend that it was a present from her father?
Oh,
I'm not sure.
Rather than Picard, I think.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah,
I've got it in my head that she said to Picard that it was a present from my father or a gift from my father. It's a tough one, because that phrase occurs a few times in the episode.
And I believe I've seen it four times, but I'm still not sure. But I believe that we only learn that it was made by their father at the end of the episode. I'm not sure we know that at this time, but maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe someone can tell us in the chat room.
Okay. Now, I think that Picard knows a lot more, or perhaps even thinks he knows a lot more than he's letting on.
Hmm.
How could he?
I don't know.
Or he suspects.
That's what I meant, as in by he thinks he knows more.
Well, he clearly thinks it was a message from Data or something that Data's managed to do.
Later on, but
we've
not
encountered that yet.
Wibbly-wobbly-timey-wimey.
At this moment, I don't see how he could even think that, I don't know. No,
I'm just going by the exchange between Darge and Picard so far, that she knew who he was, but not for the reason that is obvious in front of our faces, that she saw him in the interview. But the fact that he seems to think that what she is saying is true. So he must have some kind of an inkling of, not necessarily an understanding of what's going on here, but he has a suspicion that things aren't quite what they seem, and that she isn't quite what she seems.
Yes, just by the description of what she did in her apartment, you can realize that there's something going on. But he always was good at reading people. That's why he was such a good captain and a good negotiator and things like that. So, yeah, I think, as you said, yeah, he realizes that there's something going on, but I don't see how he can already think that she's what we know now.
No,
because we've seen the episode.
That isn't what I said. It certainly wasn't what I meant.
Okay.
That he knew who she was. I just think he knew that there was more to her than presented.
He knew that there was something fishy.
Yes. The following morning, Picard awakens, opens his window, and sees Data painting a picture in the vineyard. Picard, wearing his old Starfleet uniform, walks up to Data, who is also dressed in the same way. It's a painting of a woman with the face not yet started, in a hooded cloak, standing on a rocky shore in front of a stormy sea. Very descriptive. Data asks Picard if he'd like to finish the painting, but Picard doesn't know how. Data tells him that is not true, and as Picard reaches for the brush, he is awakened from this dream by the chiming of a clock, where he has been asleep at his desk in his study. Very suddenly, he stands up to look behind him at a similar painting on his wall, only with the woman turned away towards the sea. Laris enters, announcing that Darge is gone. She's nowhere to be seen on the feeds covering the property. Picard tells Laris that he has somewhere to go and to contact him if Darge returns.
It was nice that the painting on the wall had the face towards the sea, so we couldn't see who she was.
Yeah.
And then there was... What's that?
Exactly. So, Caroline, I believe you said at the time when we were watching this that the picture on the wall reminded you of Darge's arrival at the vineyard.
Yes, because of the robe
she was wearing. It was a different colour.
Yes.
But the look of it and how it was presented, how she was presented, that there was a similarity there.
Yeah, I didn't notice that in the four times I've watched the episode.
Nor did I. It must be a woman thing.
Yeah. An arty thing.
Yeah.
An arty thing, probably. Yes, exactly.
Probably.
So, this painting is clearly pivotal to the plot. And this, I don't know, this is kind of my first inkling that Data is somehow involved in this.
Yeah.
Picard travels to San Francisco to the Starfleet Archive Museum. By foot, obviously. It took him like a year or so to get there, you know. His belongings have been locked in status at the Quantum Archives, to which he double-checks with his hologram host, called Index, that only he has access to. And I love the exchange between Index and Picard, when Picard says, "And only I have access to this." She responds, "Unless you prefer we sell tickets." Picard says, "Is that humor?" Index says, "We're trying something new." Picard, "Don't give up your day job."
Yeah, that was funny.
That was brilliant.
Yes, I have an observation to make. So Picard wakes up from his dream. It's the morning, because we know Laris said good morning, I think, when she enters the study. And then he goes to San Francisco. So let's imagine it's, I don't know, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning in France. So he takes a transporter and gets to San Francisco. It's about midnight in San Francisco. But hey, it's the full day. It's a day. There's daylight in San Francisco. So there's a discrepancy here. Yeah, San Francisco is like 9 hours.
9 hours earlier. Behind us, yeah. Yeah. Well, 9 hours, 10 hours behind you.
Nine.
I thought San Francisco was -9, UTC -9.
Yeah.
Well, oh, no, you're right. It's -8. So, yeah, it would be 9 hours
behind. It's not really important. It should have been the middle of the night in San Francisco.
Unless the transport took longer than we'd anticipated.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's like when you send an email. I could send an email to Caroline, but it would go to America and then to Japan and then...
No.
Okay.
No.
Worth a try.
That's a blatant error.
Picard enters a single-room facility containing memorabilia from his Starfleet career, ranging from a model of the USS Stargazer to the Captain Picard Day banner, which we saw in last week's episode.
Well, no. Which we saw on the Next Gen episode, which I don't remember the name, which was...
Pegasus.
The Pegasus, yes. Which was the episode that had Riker and which was supposed to be at the same time as last week's episode. But it was not in Enterprise's last episode.
Sorry, yeah, you're right.
But it wasn't in my screenshot of both Rikers, which I posted on
that,
Twitter.
Right, and that's where I remember Telegram it from.
At twitter.com/TEGHpodcast.
You're doing good.
Yeah, I know.
Just Facebook and Mastodon to go and you're fine. Picard uses a datapad control panel to access the quantum archive and recalls one of his items stored within it, which beams in onto the display case beside the datapad inside a protective case. Placing it onto the glass table in the middle of the room, he opens it. It is the painting from his dream, only it's finished and with Darge's face on the woman at the shore. Summoning Index, she confirms that no one has entered the archive, not even for servicing. On Picard's request, she recites that the painting is an oil-on canvas and one of a paired set painted by Data in 2369 and given as a gift to Picard during their service on the Enterprise D. The title of this picture is Daughter. So now I'm thinking it's not Picard's daughter. If this picture was painted in 2369 and we're now in 2400, unless Data suddenly became a visionary, Darge is definitely not 31 years old. So at this point, I'm even less of a clue of who she is.
Data painted a lot of stuff on the Enterprise during Next Gen. So I'm not surprised that this is one of his paintings. Also, Data had a daughter on Next Gen. I don't remember the name of the episode.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, she was called Lal.
Oh, I've heard that name.
Yeah, he built her as a way to try and create another android, but then there was a catastrophic failure in her neuronal brain.
Yeah.
He couldn't save her.
I find this incredibly interesting that this painting that Picard is looking at, they've made a big deal of saying that it was part of a paired set. Why would Data have done two of these paintings?
Was not it a paired set, as in one was at that bank and one was in Picard's study?
One was on his wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, one was in his wall.
Yeah.
One was in that place. That
oh,
was
sorry, in his study, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, those are the two paintings.
Yeah, but...
Ah.
I think the two paintings might be related to...
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I've just got that as well, but I can't say it because... Yeah.
Yes.
Not
so,
yet.
No, that's kind of where I was going. This is more of an observation that it was... They made specific mention of the fact that it was part of a paired set.
Mm-hmm. It was a cool protective case.
I want one.
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, that would, make wrapping presents for Christmas very easy.
But did you notice when it collapsed down and kind of rattled itself out of its shape, it transformed into a box?
Yeah.
That just sat maybe quite nicely out of the way.
Maybe it's wrapping itself inside itself.
Indeed so, yeah. In Paris, Darge is on the run. Slumping against an alley wall, she opens up a holographic communicator device to contact her mother and tells her about the attack. She had gone somewhere to be safe, but concerned that her presence would put the people there in danger, she fled. Her mother is concerned and tells her to go back to Picard. But Darge realises she hasn't told her mother about Picard and is very confused as to how her mother knows. The face of her mother glitches and then tells her to focus and find Picard. Opening her eyes, Darge conducts a rapid-fire search on her communicator through secured systems to locate Picard at the archives, all within a few seconds.
Did you notice that the face of her mother changed after the glitch?
Yes.
Oh, no, I didn't.
As in, before the glitch, she was like, concerned, but I don't know exactly how to describe that. And then after the glitch, she was like very serious and very, very frightened. So I wonder what is this glitch and who is her mother?
Yeah, it was all a bit strange.
I put a note to get about what you just said, and at the end of it put, if indeed she's actually real.
Hmm. Bit Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for that one.
Uncanny Valley is the unhuman expressions of robots and robotic types of things.
Okay.
Where again, they try to make them look human, but there's something not quite human about them.
Yeah. Darge going through the communicator. It was very much like The Matrix meets Minority Report. The way she was kind of like sort of zapping through things, and you know, you could see some of the things she was looking at. You could see some of the words that were passing by, and as implausible as it looked, it wasn't just random pressing of items on a screen. She knew what she was doing, but clearly didn't know that she knew what she was doing.
Yeah,
it was a second. Almost like a second sense kicked in.
It was very much like some of Data. What Data did on some episode of Star Trek Next Gen when he was going really really fast doing pressing buttons on the Elcar's interface or changing secondary relays or whatever he's doing. I thought. She's really fast and she might be something.
Certainly something, yes.
Or have that element of something in her.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, this next scene might actually give us some clues.
Shed some light.
Yes. Picard is walking out of the building when Darge appears. He's stunned to see her, but glad she is safe. She tells him that she can hear conversations a block away and worries that she might have schizophrenia or may be suffering from a head trauma. Picard tells her that she doesn't, nor is she a freak, but she might in fact be very special. He tells her about Data, but the Data was not like those that attacked Mars. He insinuates that this is a common prejudice. Data was a decorated Starfleet officer who sacrificed his life for Picard over 2 decades ago. He was an artist and painted a picture of her 30 years ago. But she says that's impossible. Picard tells her that the title of the painting was Daughter and relates it to her situation. He suggests the attack on Darge became a wake-up call, almost a positronic alarm bell that activated her power as an android. He reminds her of how she stated that it was like lightning seeking the ground, the sudden emergence of her fighting abilities, the super hearing, and being able to search through Starfleet tracking systems to find him, which she most certainly did not have the proper security clearances for, all pointing him to the same conclusion. She protests, telling him of her childhood in Seattle, where her father, a xenobotanist, developed a new hybrid of orchid and named it after her. He assures her that it is a beautiful memory, but it is still hers and no one can take that away from her. He tells her to look inside, deeply and honestly, and see that she might be something lovingly and deliberately created, like the flower, and not a soulless killing machine as she fears. If she is who he thinks she is dear to him. He tells her that they will go to the Daystrom Institute in Okinawa, Japan, to see if she is indeed related to Data. Picard is impressed when she tells him that she has received a fellowship from the Daystrom Institute.
Yeah, the whole scene was nice. It was like he suddenly discovered that he had a grandchild, but the child of a dear friend, you know, and that he felt that he was related to her.
Well, exactly.
She'd be kind of like a niece, wouldn't she? Because
yeah, I think so.
He would have seen Data as almost like a brother, almost. So,
brother in arms,
or a son, maybe, because he was very protective towards Data.
Oh, so it's his granddaughter.
Yeah. So it's almost. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. But I think this was as much as a revelation to Picard as it was to Darge, because firstly, something that, you know, brings Data back to him, or at least a part of Data back to him, but also the realization that he actually has family.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And we already know how he felt about family and how his feelings about not having a family to carry on. You know, there's no heir to the Picard throne.
Yes.
So this is quite a big thing for him.
Yeah, and he explained to Dash that she might be an android that has been created. That doesn't change the fact that she's who she is, and she was she's not as he said, as you noticed, she's not just a machine. She had those memories, and that makes her unique, and that makes her what she is. Mm.
I mean, everything that she's experienced, everything that she had that she thought made her human, apart from the kick-ass fighting skills, obviously, but, you know, that is still who she is. Sorry, that is who she is. She is as much human as a human being is, other than the fact that, she might have some non-human components inside her.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, Darge flinches and has a sense of someone pursuing them. She warns Picard and begins running, pulling him behind her. Picard, out of breath, follows her up the stairs to a rooftop where men similar to the group of assassins that killed her boyfriend and attacked her appear. So, let me get this straight. We're under attack. So, let's run away and go to the most open and accessible place we can that we cannot escape from. What can go wrong?
And take a stairs and I don't know what age Picard is at this time, to go there, so you can arrive there and out of breath.
She almost dragged him up the stairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's an old man, come on.
Oh, I really worried for his health when she was running.
Take a lift at least.
Yeah.
Sorry, elevator.
But it makes for good TV.
Yeah. Darge begins fighting the attackers using advanced hand-to-hand combat skills dodging disruptor blasts and leaping long distances. It's like the opening to Superman, isn't it?
Yeah.
She smashes the mask of one of the men, who is revealed to be Romulan. One spits acid at her, damaging the gun that Darge is holding and getting the acid on her lower face and clothes. Dropping the weapon, the acid eats away and burns at her, and she screams out in pain. As Picard shouts in horror, the compromised weapon causes an explosion that envelops Darge and blows Picard back some distance. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because just as you think you know what's going to happen, something else happens.
Yeah, and she gets blown into bits. I mean, good grief.
Yeah, so I can buy the whole fighting scene. It was well made. It was great. Up until what I call the Matrix jump. Why? Why? She could have just run the stairs. I mean, run to the stairs. I mean, why that?
It worked for the Wachowskis. That's all I can say.
But it almost ruined this scene. Almost, because it was actually a good scene.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, everything was spot on except this horrific jump.
It doesn't even fit.
No.
With the android side of things.
Exactly. It's just there and doesn't belong here.
Yeah. No, I do agree. I think that was one leap too far.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll be here all day. So then we're on to Act 4. I'm really quite surprised we got through this review as quickly as we have, to be fair. Flashes of his dreams and events of the day appear as Picard awakens at home, tended by Laris and Jaban. Picard tells them that Darge is dead, which shocks them. The police told them that he was found alone on the roof and, according to the feeds, got there alone. Jaban wonders if she had access to a cloaking device that interfered with the feeds. Picard muses that she must have had an automatic system that triggered when she was in danger, and that she was a refugee, like Laris, like Jaban, and like himself. He laments his life in hiding, nursing his offended dignity, writing books of history that people prefer to forget. He declares, "I haven't been living, I've been waiting to die." He then stands up with purpose.
Yeah, I can understand that Dash would have a shield to, so she doesn't appear on the feed. But what about the Romulans?
Exactly. That seemed too convenient. The idea of having a cloaking device, unless that cloaking device managed to cover absolutely everybody except Picard. And also, if the security fees they were talking about, they did see Picard, then they would have seen Picard being thrown back probably a couple hundred feet from the bottom of those stairs to where he landed towards the back of the roof. So, no, I think this was a little bit sloppy.
Yeah, what happened probably is that someone tampered with the feed. So,
yes.
Maybe the Romulans.
That would make more sense, certainly.
Yeah.
So, I'm guessing then that this whole thing, the whole thing with Darge and with Picard and Picard trying to find purpose in his life, that's going to form at least an arc for this series, for this season.
How about a 10-episode arc?
Enterprise did a 24-episode arc. What was wrong with that? Yeah. Well, plenty, to be fair.
Nothing.
But, I think this is going to be an ongoing week-to-week thing of Picard trying to re-find his purpose.
Well, I have a feeling that this whole, at least the whole first season, will be a huge story. It's not going to be that 10 episodes, you know, with no relation to each other.
No, exactly. So it will be a single episode broken up into 10 parts.
Yes, yeah. That's what I think.
That would make a lot more sense. And I think they can do a lot more with it. If they have... How many times have we said, when we were going through the episodes for Enterprise, they seem to have rushed it. They seem to have got to the end really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than trying to put in, I don't know what, there were, I don't know, 17, 18 distinct storylines within season 4 of Enterprise. It might be slightly less than that, actually. Across 22 broadcast episodes, then you start with one storyline and then spread that out to 10 episodes and actually fill it with some, you know, quality, meaningful content. You can go either way with this. You either make the episode too short, rush it, or you make the episode too long. Sorry, the storyline too long, and it becomes a chore.
Yeah, like they did in season 3.
Like Enterprise season 3, exactly.
But we'll see.
We shall. Over the next 9 weeks, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
At the Daystrom Institute, Picard meets with Dr. Agnes Jurati. He asks her if it's possible to make a sentient android out of flesh and blood, and she laughs. But then she realizes that he's serious and says that it is impossible, at least 1,000 years away. But then he tells her that he had just had tea with one. Now, I found it really quite amusing that clearly Dr. Jurati was quite blown away to be in the presence of Admiral Picard. And he just comes out and asks his question. There's no preamble, there's no niceties, there's no, it's nice to meet you, shake a hand. He's straight in with the, is it possible to make a sentient android out of flesh and blood?
Yeah, but he's responding to her question. What can I help you with? That's what he came from before.
Yeah, even if someone come up to you and said, what can I help you with? You would probably phrase it along the lines of, I wonder if you can tell me if.
Yeah.
Or something like that. That's true. Not just come straight out with it, a smack her in the face with a tray kind of question.
That's true.
They walk to the remains of the Division of Advanced Synthetic Research Lab area, now a ghost town of unused work desks. Jurati explains that the rogue synthetics came from their lab. Now they do only theoretical research which can never be developed or tested. The creation of new androids would be a violation of galactic treaty. That's got to be a kick in the teeth, isn't it?
Yeah, that lab really looks like, abandoned. Although it was very clean, but very, very strange. Yeah, you wouldn't wonder what they can actually achieve, because, you know, theory and simulation, it has its limits.
It does, and if they're not permitted to do. I suppose that there may be a limit as to the kind of things they can achieve through practical application, non-movable prototypes or something. I don't know.
But a very clever Roomba.
Oh, brilliant! I can just imagine bringing down the entire planetary shipyard. I can't remember the name of it now. Utopia Planitia. With a Roomba, bring that, fantastic. But yeah, the lab area, it didn't look that big, actually. To say that it was effectively pretty much any android that was created in the latter part of that time period came out of that laboratory. I'm guessing they must have had some kind of production facility elsewhere, and that was just used for research. But it didn't look like that bigger facility.
No.
Jurati opens a drawer containing a disassembled B4. Jurati explains that Data's attempt to copy his neural network to B4 shortly before his death was an almost total failure. B4 was too inferior and not much like Data at all, and most of the positronic network was lost. Nobody had been able to redevelop the science to create a Sung-type android. She tells Picard that she was recruited by Bruce Maddox out of Starfleet to work on developing such technology, but after the ban, Maddox was emotionally crushed and then disappeared, and since then she has been unable to find him.
It was nice to have a reference to Maddox that we've seen on Next Gen. Season 2, episode 9, in the episode called The Measure of a Man. And Maddox was trying to have Data's right to self, to his right to choose what he would. I don't know how to explain that in proper English, but he wanted to have Data come with him to disassemble him, to learn how he's been built, to start building more like Data. And the whole episode, he was treating Data as a machine, calling Data it.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of the episode, he realized that Data was a lot more than just a machine.
And I think him and Data became friends, didn't they? As in...
Yeah. Possibly in a later episode. I don't remember that, but... Yeah. So that's another link to Next Gen.
Which we'll probably end up reviewing at some point in the middle distance.
Because the tweeters have spoken.
Yes, but that only refers to season one at this stage, and only then, until some of the new stuff comes in, we'll probably have to put season one on hold until that's done.
Yeah.
We know there's a lot of new material coming through this year, so I'm not sure when we'll get to season two. Jurati tells Picard that any new android, even one of flesh and blood, would need to be created out of Data's neural net, now lost. He holds up Darge's necklace and she is stunned. She sits and tells him the necklace holds a symbol for fractal neuronic cloning, a radical idea of Maddox's that would have allowed a new android created from Data's code and possibly including his memories to be cloned to a degree, reconstituted from a single positronic neuron and thus contain an essence of Data. Picard declares Darge to be Data's daughter, created by Maddox and modelled after Daughter, the painting. He comments that Data always wanted a daughter. Jurati says it would be possible to create a female android from Data's positronic neuron, using the plural they. Picard asks, twins? Jurati concurs, they were created in pairs. So there's another one, Picard muses. So this is...
That was the duff-duff-duffer moment.
It kind of was the duff-duff-duffer moment because, sorry, for those who don't live in the UK, that was a reference to the, in EastEnders, the soap opera, right at the very end, when the final reveal is made of the episode, you get the start of the theme tune, which starts duff, 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 duffer. So, yeah, this goes back to what I was saying earlier on about the paintings having been done as a paired set.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether we don't know what the other picture was called. We know that the picture in Picard's storage facility was called Daughter, but we don't know what the other one was called. This stage, but it is possible, I suppose, that the two paintings are representative of the two androids.
Yes, up to this point I was thinking that it was the same two paintings of the same person, but when I heard that there were twins, I thought, then two paintings, two androids.
Yep. Yes.
Maybe that's why the original painting had a slightly different color coat. Because that was the other one, not this one.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Hadn't considered that.
See, not just a.
So we're coming into the final scene now, actually. A Romulan transport flies into a dock at the Romulan reclamation site. Narek walks on a catwalk over to a Dr. Asher. She looks exactly like Darge. He introduces himself and she introduces herself as Soji. He compliments her necklace, identical to the one in Picard's possession. And she briefly explains that it was made by her father, a match with the one that her twin sister wears. Narek talks about his brother, not a twin, deceased unexpectedly as of last year. She offers to listen to his story.
Yeah.
What is his story?
I don't know, but it's going to be interesting.
Mm.
Well, I'm going to make a prediction here, and I'm happy for this to go on record. I predict that he is going to be connected in some way with the attack that killed Darge. Now, I'm not suggesting, but I'm not suggesting that he was involved in the attack that killed Darge. However, the fact that he's a Romulan and the Romulans and androids don't exactly have a great relationship at the moment, I think that he has been assigned Soji in order to find out more about her as some way of eradicating the androids going forward. I don't know what. I'm clutching at straws here, but that's where I predict this is going.
You're missing another vital comment in that scene.
Yes.
Darge not only didn't know about her hidden abilities.
She didn't know about her sister.
But Sorge said it was about her sister, so she knows that she has a twin sister.
Darge never mentioned it.
No.
So she knows more. And when she said her dad made, does that mean she knows her dad?
Not necessarily, I don't think, because Darge said she had a dad who was a xenobotanist.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who Soji thinks her dad is.
But if she does know her dad,
yes,
does she know the dad that we think is the dad?
Does she even know she's an android?
But if she does know the dad that we think is the dad, then that makes an even bigger layer of it, because how is that possible?
True, but it's all conjecture at this point, isn't it?
I think I still have to check that Dash actually said that her necklace was has been made by her father. I'm not sure about that. But let's talk on the basis that she didn't.
Okay.
I think that Soji knows a father, and she might know that she's an android, that Darge was an android, and she might call Maddox her father.
Also, is her father a genuine father, or is it similar to Darge's mum who glitched on the... So it's a memory of a parent rather than an actual parent.
As I said, I think Soji knows Maddox as her father. But I have a feeling, it's just a feeling, I have a feeling she knows she's an android.
Because maybe Maddox was able to help Data do what Data wanted.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. It's a bit far-fetched, but...
You say it's a bit far-fetched, also, but this is a serious sentence.
But it's a bit far-fetched even for Star Trek. Also, Narek's entrance. I mean, come on, that's a bad guy's entrance.
Oh,
that's
yes.
not a hero entrance. You know, it, what's missing is, you know, lights, loud music, and that's a wrestling fight. That's the kind of thing. I mean, when he gets in. I was like, okay, you're the bad guy. Because so far, we don't have a bad guy. We have bad guys that get you know, red shots.
Because he went basically straight to her as well. There was no... he went straight to her. So he went to a ship with purpose to get to a certain person. It wasn't just a case of, oh, I'll speak to you because I've just passed you. It was a
no, he knew who she was.
Exactly.
He knew her name.
Yeah.
Or Dr. Also, Asher, at least.
I thought he looked weird, but...
Also, she looked really... She said, you know, when he said you don't want to hear your story, she said guess again, and she looked like she was about to kiss him.
Yeah, there was a something there, wasn't there?
Mm.
Yeah. So I don't know. There's something weird going on between those two.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you say, maybe he's been assigned to something, and maybe she also was assigned because, you know, she was holding your necklace. Like, why would she hold that? And he, of course, noticed that. And so there's this, it's like she wanted him to notice.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Or maybe they're on the same, from the same faction, and they had to, you know, meet this person at this time. She will wear a necklace, and I don't know. There's something. Maybe we're completely off, and that's what's great, because we have like 100 questions and only 9 episodes left.
I want to take this opportunity to give a big shout out to Memory Alpha, as always, because they've saved a lot of time, I have to admit, in putting this this review together, but also because I have found an article on Memory Alpha called Necklace. And it details all of the notable necklaces that exist in the Star Trek universe. And it does say here, so it's a little bit of a nerny-ner-ner moment. In the late 24th century, Darge possessed a necklace that, at least according to her recollection, was given to her by her father.
Okay.
So I'd stand by what I said. I do believe she did say that she had, that it was given to her by her father.
Mm-hmm. But probably a father like the mother she had on the communicator, a fabricated one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm not suggesting it was physically given to her, that maybe there was a suggestion implanted into her positronic brain that it was given to her at some point in the past.
Whereas I think Soji was given, and she knows that she was given the thing.
Okay. Two predictions then. Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we have not yet finished the review. No. This Caroline, this is the duff duff duffer moment.
This was the bit that me and Dave went, huh?
Well, no, because it happened, and I said, "Let's do it anyway." So, at the end of the scene, we pan out from the Romulan reclamation site, yep. And it is revealed that the reclamation site is indeed the wreckage of a Borg cube.
Dun, dun.
And as it appeared on the screen, I said to Caroline, that's a Borg cube. And I went, what? And then the closing theme.
And I was in front of my TV, and when I saw that, I said something that I can't repeat on this podcast.
Did it begin with the letter M?
No, I said it in English. That's true. Yeah, it begins by what?
Oh, okay. Yes.
That's terrible, because when you said M, I was thinking of a English
no,
word French, that says, and I thought, oh, that's pretty strong.
But yeah, what the actual heck? It was just that I could follow everything up to this point.
And then
a Borg cube.
That is what is known as the hook.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I'm hooked.
Yeah, me too.
Absolutely.
Me too.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Then the end credits. Okay, I would like to say that the ending credit music is more Star Trek than the starting credit music was, in my opinion, because I picked out elements of the TNG theme and the discovery theme from the ending music.
And talking about TNG theme, the last two or three notes from the opening credits are actually the ones from Next Gen.
I shall have to go back and listen to that again.
Yeah.
Wow. So, what a first episode.
Yeah. Really, really, really great. There's one thing that I loved about this episode. There is no lens flare. no stupid lens flare effects, as you know, there's a ton of them in Discovery, and it's just I don't like that. But yeah, and there was no slow parts in this episode. Never was I bored or was like, okay, move on. It was very well timed, very well played by all the actors. Mm-hmm. You can see it's a science fiction series, but it's not. There's not a lot of advanced technology things. It's something we can almost touch, as in now in the 21st century we can relate to that, and probably because it was all on Earth. So we'll see when we actually go into in space with the Starship, but. Yeah, very well done. I loved it. The fact that I watched it four times actually speaks for itself.
Yes, it does.
I'm hooked. And when the episode ended, I was like, "What? No, I want more." it's not 45 minutes yet. And yes, it was.
Wow. So, yes. So can't wait to next week. Well, I say next week. In the time of recording, it's 2 days away, but. Yeah. But still.
It's actually 25 hours.
Woo-hoo. Where you are, maybe.
Because I think they go out here 1 hour earlier than in the UK. Because it was out at 1 minute past midnight last Friday.
Oh, maybe it's regional then.
Yeah.
So we could actually watch it on, tomorrow night? Stay up? No. No, not at my age. Anyway, so if we're done, unless anybody else has anything else to add to this?
No.
Then that concludes our review of Star Trek Picard, Season 1, Episode 1, Remembrance.
So, we've been recording this for a long time now, so unfortunately Caroline is going to have to leave us soon. So, we're going to have more... occasion to talk about your Star Trek experience and where people can find everything you do outside of being with us on this podcast. But there is something you are not going to escape, and that's our quickfire guest questions.
We need a little jingle for it, I think.
Yeah, we need something. So, do you know the rules of our quickfire questions?
They've explained.
No, I didn't.
So did you?
There are no rules.
Because there's no rules.
Oh, you tell me about the questions, but...
Quick questions, no time to think, just on the first answers that comes to your mind. Okay? Mm-hmm. You ready? What's your favorite series?
The Next Generation, because that's the one that I grew up on.
Good. What's your favorite film?
The Journey Home.
Yeah.
Or The Voyage Home. I can't remember which one it is.
I think it is The Voyage Home. Right. I kept saying Journey Home, but I think it is Voyage Home.
The one with the dolphins.
The one with the dolphins,
yes. Mm-hmm.
They weren't dolphins, by the way. They were whales.
What's your favourite ship?
I am still a fan of the Next Generation one, so that would be the Enterprise D.
She's a beauty.
Enterprise D.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Enterprise D, yeah. She's a beauty.
But I nearly said to Dave, if that question came up, I would say the Orville, just for a chuckle. Because it looks like a toilet seat.
I still think you should have done, yes.
Yeah. What's your favourite or best captain?
It's got to be Picard.
Yeah.
And I actually quite like Janeway, but Dave poo-pooed me when I mentioned that.
It wasn't Janeway poo-pooed, it was the series that she represented. Yes.
Yeah. Well... You know, she's a captain, so she's eligible for an answer to this question. What's your favourite or best character?
So I was torn with this, but ultimately, I think I would say Wesley Crusher, because he was around about my age. And when I watched The Next Generation, he was probably the one that helped me relate to the show. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. That's a first. I think we did, never had Wesley Crusher as the best character.
Not yet.
What's your favorite storyline? So that could be an arc, an episode, or a film segment, or an entire season, or
so whatever. In The Next Generation, there was a episode called The Game, which you just lost, by the way. And it was in The Next Generation. So Wesley Crusher had gone on holiday and he came back and everybody was obsessed with a game. So they wore these little head things, but it was kind of a mind control-y type thing. I liked that one.
Did we decide it was a Qatarian thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
So it was like a disc that you had to get into something.
Mm.
Okay.
But he was the only one not affected because he wasn't on the ship when the game started.
Okay. And now the question that trips everyone, what's your favourite of our best villain?
I enjoyed the villain Q for funniness, but I think if it's the best in as way as the worst, as in the most effective, I would have said Khan, because he freaked me out when I was younger. The insects in the ear and all that sort of thing, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
But then by not liking that means he's a very effective baddie.
Well, that's an interesting set of answers. I'm going to add that to the unupdated page on our website. I will someday go back and fill that page. With that, that concludes our quick fire questions to our guests. And I guess it's going to be a goodbye to Caroline. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And if you want to hear more of Caroline, you can join the Buckcast every Friday night at 9:30 PM UK time at thebuckcast.org/live.
Well, thank you to everyone who has downloaded our previous episodes. You can help us make the world aware of our existence by swapping your kids' lunchbox with a box full of stickers with the address of our website.
Oh, come on.
What?
Well, food for the kid. Star Trek, food for the kids. No, okay, good.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah. Although, if you think that is a cruel, unusual punishment, then you can always share the address of our website on social media.
Yeah. So, website, which is teearlgreyhut.org, you will find all our reviews, show notes, those silly helping us thing are also on the website. And you will find also a list of our guests and the episodes in which they appeared.
If you want to get in contact with us, you can send us an email. Our address is feedback@teearlgreyhot.org. We love to hear from you. We read every single email we receive, and we may well read out your email on the show unless you specifically ask us not to.
We're also on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Telegram, at TEGH Podcast everywhere. We're also on Mastodon at mastodon.social/@TEGH Podcast.
As I've already mentioned, thank you very much indeed to Memory Alpha. As always, we have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of the show, unless otherwise stated, is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share-alike license, which means you can do pretty much whatever you want with it as long as you credit us as the original authors. And if you publish something based on this episode, you have to release it under the same license.
This podcast is a part of the increasingly awesome Other Side Podcast Network. You can find more of our incredibly good shows over at otherside.network.
Indeed. Next week, Michael Tennell will be back on the show to review Star Trek Picard Episode 2, Maps and Legends.
Be good to have Michael back on the show again.
Yeah, and hopefully it's going to be as good as, or maybe even better than the episode we just reviewed today.
I do have a feeling, though, we're going to end up with more questions unanswered then than we do now.
Yeah. I agree. Mm. That's so far, at least this first episode is awesome, so let's cross our fingers and hope that the whole series will be like that. And I have no doubt it will be.
So a couple of weeks ago, I think we did ask the question about whether Picard was going to live up to the hype that had been generated around it. Personally, I think it absolutely has. I've not been disappointed. I've been shocked, certainly, but I've not been disappointed by anything that's happened in this episode. If you compare it to, say, the first ever episode of Discovery, or even going back to the first ever episode of the original series, and you can pick whichever first ever episode you want with that one, be it the pilot, be it the first one that was produced, be it the first one that was broadcast. And they've always been kind of, I don't know, meh. They haven't gone straight in and captured you immediately. Whereas this one, Picard, Remembrance, it really has done. And I'm really, really quite impressed by what they were able to achieve and the feeling and the emotion you get from the episode right from the very start. So, yeah, congratulations for that.
I wonder if that's in part because even though it's not the continuation of Next Gen, it is Picard. It has Data in it. We have references to Next Gen. So they don't really have to introduce Picard. We already know him. So they don't, when the series starts, we know it's Picard. Yes, we have to establish that he's no longer in Starfleet. He's left Starfleet because of the synthetic attack on Mars, yep, and everything. But the character is there. We know his past. There's no point establishing what he's done in the past. So maybe it's because of that. But in any case, it's a really great first episode. And as I said, there's no slow parts, and you get straight into it. And yeah, very, really great.
There's no real frame of reference. We've not had a situation before in Star Trek where we have had a brand new series containing a previously well-established character that I'm aware of.
Absolutely.
But going forward, we've got Pike, we've got Section 31, both of which will be carrying on from two fairly well-established characters. So mm-hmm. I think the litmus test for those will be how the first episode of Picard worked for us. If we feel the same way, because they're not having to go through the effort of introducing who the characters are or anything like that, that they've been able to get into the storyline so much quicker. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. And with that, I guess it's time to conclude episode 23 of TL Grey Hut. We will be back next week with a whole bunch more of Star Trek Picard. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.